I guess we're going to get started now. It looks like the chamber has been sealed. Thank you for coming to the far reaches of the conference center to hear about building metro-style apps with HTML and JavaScript. So thanks a lot for coming. Just as a kind of show of hands to give me a sense of what people know, kind of as background here, how many of you have actually installed Windows 8 and tried it out at all on one of your computers? So good number of you. How many of you actually tried building a Windows 8 metro-style app yet? Has anyone popped up VS and started trying to write something? All right. How many of you tried doing so with HTML and JavaScript yet? Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, welcome to the session where we're going to talk all about that. My name is Paul Gus Marino. I'm a lead program manager on the developer experience team in Windows, and we're the team that's building the platform for making these Windows 8 metro-style apps. And I've been at Microsoft, just a little bit about me, I've been at Microsoft for 10 years now, always working on UI technologies, and for the past 3 years working on the UI platform for Windows 8. I've loved coding and I loved UI technologies ever since I was a little kid, writing apps all the way back in BASIC on my Apple II many, many years ago, and then in Pascal on my Mac many years after that, and then in HyperCard, and then HTML when it was brand new with Mosaic. And then Java, and then .NET and stuff. And I've always loved being a consumer of kind of the latest trends in UI technologies and kind of trying to make great apps. And so it's been very fun for me personally to be on the kind of other side of it the past several years, trying to make a great UI platform for people to use to make apps. And so I'm pretty humbled and honored to be here on behalf of all the folks back home who've been working on this to talk about it. Really, we're going to talk about a few things. We're going to start with a quick recap on what is Windows 8 metro-style UI, because there are a lot of myths about that. I don't know if many of you got to go to the talk I gave yesterday that kind of really elaborated on all the UI patterns and what it really means to make a metro-style app. I'm just going to touch on that briefly. And today's talk is really going to dive into the platform for building those metro-style UIs and those metro-style apps using HTML and JavaScript. And we're specifically going to deep dive into a lot of the new features in HTML and CSS, and we're going to deep dive into the Windows Library for JavaScript, WinJS, and a lot of the features that we put in there for you to build these metro-style apps. And I'm hoping that you'll be able to leave with a lot of tangible examples of specific things that you should know and go and look into, and specific API sets that you should go use and take advantage of to make these apps that have that metro-style look and feel on them using HTML and JavaScript. So let's jump right into, what is metro-style UI? Well, it is not just a skin and a thin veneer that you can apply to any kind of UI. It's not just, ooh, make things brightly colored and get rid of rounded corners. That is not what metro-style UI is. Metro-style UI actually is a set of common user interface patterns that are grounded in a set of design principles and are supported by the Windows 8 platform. That's really kind of a definition you should think about when you think about what metro-style UI is for Windows 8. And I dove into this a lot in the talk I gave yesterday and what those specific patterns are and what those design principles are and how to think about all those things. Some of the examples of patterns, you know, what do we mean by patterns? We mean all those things that we human beings perceive about the system as we use it. All those things that we recognize and come to expect. Things like, where do I look for commands and what are the keyboard shortcuts for them? How does it feel when I pan through some content or try and select stuff? What gestures do what? What happens when I rotate my screen? All these things that we come to expect as human beings about how the system works create an environment, a kind of virtual world that all your apps participate in. And by adopting the metro-style UI and the UI patterns of it, you can kind of participate in that world and make your users instantly familiar with and productive in your apps. And those patterns are grounded in a set of principles. Principles like pride and craftsmanship, do more with less, and fast and fluid. And these are principles that we use to help us define these UI patterns and kind of really give the gestalt to the system and the kind of coherence and the feeling we want people to have using metro-style UI and using these apps. And so what I'm going to talk to you about today, especially, is the Windows 8 platform features that we built for HTML and JavaScript to let you implement those patterns and let you have those kind of principles come through in the apps that you create. And I want to start with doing a quick demo of some metro-style apps to just show you some of the things I'm talking about here. The first one I'm going to pop up really quickly is just the WordPress app. Everything I show you today, by the way, is something that you have access to. So all the apps I'm going to show are apps that are right there in the release preview you can go and download and use. And all the code I'm going to show you today are from SDK samples that you can go and download and use too. So there's no magic or anything hidden about anything I'm going to present to you today. It's all tangible, real stuff that you can go and download and start using and see right away. Anyway, this WordPress app, I thought it was a cool app. I saw it on the store. And it really exemplifies a few of the Metro-style UI principles. One of the common things that you see to it is it has this kind of big grid that you can scroll through. It's kind of the grid view pattern. And you see groups, kind of here's the June 12th group, here's the June 7th group, the June 6th group, and so forth. You can see this kind of fast and fluid kind of feeling to how that panning works. You can see that it still works with mouse and keyboard, though, so I can scroll with mouse. If I tab into it, I can use the keyboard to move around. So it's a very rich UI. There's hover states. If I click on things, it'll navigate into articles. There's a fast and kind of fluid kind of animation you see as you switch between those screens. Another thing that's very common in Metro-style apps, a pattern we call semantic zoom, and that's exhibited in this app. So if I just go and I pinch here, you see it zooms out to kind of a high-level view that lets me quickly jump to a certain date and then zoom into that date. So I can zoom out and then zoom back into other dates. And so the grid pattern, the semantic zoom, those are two very common patterns you see in Metro-style UI, the way the panning feels, the way the interactions work, the animations. Another common thing is the app bar. So if I right-click in the background or if I swipe up from the bottom of the screen, the app bar comes up. That's another common element you see in many Metro-style apps. And if you just think about things like using the grid view, using the semantic zoom, using the app bar, those are three patterns you can adopt right away in an app that will immediately start to make it have a Metro-style look and feel to it. So that's one app I wanted to show. Another one I wanted to show was SkyDrive really quickly. That's another app, very similar thing. It has kind of a grid of content. It has behaviors like selection, so I can go, I can see a list of data. This is data bound to a web service. So this is data that's coming live off the Windows Live SkyDrive service. And if I go and I select something and I say delete it, it's going to go and delete it off that web service. Okay? So that just went and did a web service call and deleted that thing, updated the view in response to that. So these are the kinds of UIs that you can build Metro-style UI. But it's still, do you see how fast and fluid that felt? I'll delete this one here. And there's kind of that animation to how things all happened. So that's also the grid view with selection. The app bar in use. Another example I'm going to show really quickly is the mail app. A lot of similar stuff. It's not that horizontal scrolling UI, but there's a list view. You can select things. You have an app bar and so forth, kind of interact with it. And everything feels kind of fast and fluid as you use it. And so those are just some examples of kind of Metro-style UI that we're going to talk today about the platform for building. And so let's jump back to the deck. And really dig into that. And so if you want to learn more about those patterns and all the details of them, check out the video for the talk I gave yesterday called Building Metro-Style UIs. So let's talk about the platform for Metro-Style apps with HTML and JavaScript. If you think about it, there really are three libraries you're going to be calling into to build your app. At the center of it all is HTML and CSS. All the things that you know. If all of you guys have done web programming before, you know HTML and CSS. SVG, Canvas, divs, spans, event listeners, all that stuff. That's kind of a core set of API library that you're going to use to build your app. A second thing you're going to use is WinJS. This is the Windows library for JavaScript. It's a JavaScript library we're making available as part of Windows 8 that gives you some more stuff that you need, and I'll talk more about that. And then you're going to be calling into the Windows runtime. And these are the core Windows system APIs, the things that let you access the core capabilities of the system. And so these are the three kind of API libraries, basically, if you think about it, you're going to be calling into to make your app and the UI of your Metro-style app. And let's talk about each one of them. HTML, CSS. Well, you all know it's a powerful engine for presenting data to users. There are many companies we can rattle off the top of our head that are valued at billions of dollars who make all their UI in HTML and CSS. It's a very powerful library for creating UIs, and it's only gotten more powerful. And one of the things that's great about it is you can reuse a lot of skills that you and other people have, a lot of tools, and a lot of existing code. There's lots of libraries of great JavaScript code, charting code, and so on and so forth that you can reuse using HTML and CSS. And when we were looking at Windows 8, and we were looking at the Metro-style UI and trying to figure out how can we let people build this UI with HTML and CSS, we found that there were some things that were missing, though. And so one of the things I'm going to talk about today is some of the stuff we've done to HTML and CSS, where we've either improved our existing implementation of some web standards, we've implemented more web standards that we hadn't implemented before, or we've even augmented web standards and implemented new things, entirely new things, to let you use HTML and CSS and extend that library so that you can actually use that to build Metro-style UIs. And I'm going to go into a lot more depth about that. Now, when we were looking at Metro-style UI, we also realized there are some things that make sense for us to add right into HTML, but there's some things that don't make sense to do that with. And so some of the things we realized, the right way to deliver them to you and the right way to give you those APIs was to give you a JavaScript library. And so we actually went, the Windows team, if you can believe it, actually went and wrote JavaScript code, and we created a JavaScript library that gives you a bunch of key other things, including certain signature controls and other UI building blocks, things like that semantic zoom I showed you, that grid view, that app bar. Those are all part of WinJS. We gave you a bunch of style sheets with the default Metro styling, so you have a great starting point to have this kind of new look and feel. And they're just pure CSS style sheets. I'll show you this. And we also built some other common infrastructure for responsible, reliable apps, just common things, utilities and things that we think you'll need and want to take advantage of. I want to point out, because I get this question with WinJS, is it the only JavaScript library you can use? No, it's just a JavaScript library that provides this set of functionality that we think is really necessary for you to build a Metro-style app, but you can use it in concert with other JavaScript libraries as well, if you have other JavaScript libraries that are doing other things that you need. And then there's the Windows runtime. And the Windows runtime is the core set of Windows APIs that through the Windows RT technology we've projected up through every programming language. And so in JavaScript, you can directly call into these core Windows APIs. And these let you do things like seamlessly integrate with the Metro-style shell, so features like notifications. These let you connect to other apps through contracts. If you guys saw the keynote that yesterday Antoine and Linda gave, you saw things like the share contract and the search contract and the picker contract. And so using these WinRT APIs, you can access those capabilities. And you can also just access core things about the system. You can access devices, storage, you can save a file, you can get the resolution of the monitor, you can get all sorts of just system stuff using these APIs. And so together, these three libraries, the HTML and CSS API set, the WinJS API set, and the Windows Runtime API set, combined are the kind of the tool set you have there to make these Metro-style apps. And I'm going to do a quick demo of that using the VS template, just to give you kind of more tangible feeling about what that actually means. And so if you go to VS and you do new project, one of the new projects you can pick is called the Grid app. And so that's just what this is here. And I just want to poke up a few files in it. So this is like if you went to new project, it'd be right here, this Grid app thing, okay? One of the files in it is this default.js file, so kind of the default JS file that loads up. And let's look at some of the things we're seeing here. So we're seeing some APIs being called that have WinJS dot something, okay? WinJS.application, WinJS.navigation. Those are APIs that fall under the WinJS API set, obviously. There's some APIs you see that start with Windows dot something. Those are APIs that are coming from the Windows runtime, all right? So when you see, and you go through that code and you see these function calls, the ones that are WinJS dot something are from WinJS, the ones that are Windows dot something are from the Windows runtime, and then you all know all the standard, HTML DOM APIs, add event listeners and set attributes and all that kind of stuff, and those are just the standard DOM APIs, the HTML document object model APIs. One of the things that... if you look at this other file, navigator.js, you can kind of get a sense of the kinds of things you're going to be calling into these different sets of APIs for. You're going to call into the Windows runtime APIs for things like getting the application view state. Okay, is your app snapped? Is your app in full screen mode? What's going on with your app? To get things like display properties, that's something else you'll get out of the Windows runtime. Okay, out of WinJS, you'll get things like utilities around navigation, around doing UI and UI controls, other kind of utilities around data binding and other things. So that's the kind of stuff you'll find in WinJS. And you just see that looking at the template and the kind of code it's calling. Now, I want to talk about how WinJS is referenced, because some people have questions about that. So if I just go to the default HTML page, that's like the main starting page when I start this template. Oh, I forgot to run it. Let me just run it for a second. Sorry. Have you guys all seen this template before? It just kind of gives you a basic skeleton of an app that you can use as a starting point. So it doesn't have every single feature implemented. It has a grid there. You can click on a group header to some navigation to get into a subview. You can get into a sub-subview, et cetera. Just some basic hookup of basic kind of skeleton of app. It doesn't have the app bar hooked up. It doesn't have semantic zoom. That's all for you to do as an app author. It just has some basic skeleton kind of stuff there. But it's a good starting point. And if you look at how we reference WinJS there, you can see that it's just referenced via this // stuff. So let me just explain that for a second. WinJS is a JavaScript library, but you don't just take the files and like plop them into your app. We actually developed a technology that lets you basically dynamically reference WinJS. So if you look in the right-hand side, you'll see that there's this references section. And actually, WinJS, the Windows Library for JavaScript, falls there under references. All right? And so you can dynamically reference it. And the reason for that is very simple. That way, we can make bug fixes for you, and your app will be fixed when we make those bug fixes. Now, every time we make just small bug fixes as we're developing things, we just do that in place. whenever we have a big, you know, change, like big breaking changes and so forth, we actually change the name of the library so you can explicitly, you know, be in control of switching over to that new version. So right now with the Windows release preview, you'll see that we're referencing Microsoft.winjs.1.0.rc, but once RTM comes out, the final version of Windows, that'll just be Microsoft.winjs.1.0, for example. And for beta, it was Microsoft.winjs.0.6, okay? So you can change those references explicitly, but we can also dynamically update it. And you see otherwise, it just is referenced just like, you know, other JavaScript files, basically. And the templates all have this set up the right way for you by default. All right. So that's kind of a quick high-level picture of these three libraries of APIs, the types of things you're going to call into from them, how they're kind of hooked up and work. And what I'm going to do for the rest of today's talk, and it's going to be kind of a whirlwind, pretty fast-paced, is we're actually going to walk through a lot of the improvements and a lot of the things we've delivered for you in WinJS and in HTML and CSS that you should take advantage of. There's a lot of great stuff in the Windows runtime. There's a talk John Lamb gave yesterday that highlighted some of that stuff. There's a talk that Scott Dickens gave yesterday that also highlighted some of the kinds of things you can do, and there's lots of other material online about that. We're going to dive into WinJS and HTML and CSS. And specifically, we're going to cover these kinds of features that you kind of need to know about around CSS layouts and transforms and animations, HTML DOM, pointer APIs, scroll views, HTML controls. And in WinJS, we're going to talk about pages, the animation library, the style sheets, promises, binding, list view, and app bar. It's not every single thing that exists, but it's just a bunch of things to kind of get you wet and so that you know the main things you got to go and know about and look into and learn about. So let's start with CSS layouts. And as we do so, keep in mind those apps that I showed you at the beginning and how these things are used to let you implement UIs like that, that feel like that. Switching over. So CSS layouts. You know, you've seen all these Metro-style UIs or these full-screen apps that are immersive, that take up all the space. But they have to work on a range of form factors. People have big screens, they have little screens, they've got tablet screens. People rotate their screens. You can take apps and you can snap them. You can make them full screen. There are all these different kind of possibilities of things you need to do. And so with CSS layouts, we wanted to make it really easy for you to do that and also really performant. Because when someone rotates their screen, when someone does things like that, when someone snaps an app, you want that to be like that. You don't want to be, oh, all my JavaScript code is running now to like do a huge layout pass of things. And so we implemented right into the HTML engine features like grid, CSS grid, CSS flexbox, multi-column support, and some additional media queries that give you that kind of native performance and are easy to use. And let's go take a look at that. So this is one of the SDK samples we have. It's called the Fluid App sample. I'm going to launch it in the simulator, which is a great way to show these kinds of features. And I'm just going to highlight one quick little fact about it and then show you some code that's tied to that. So I can launch, you know, see this app. It's just kind of a little weather app kind of thing. And what I'm going to do is something very simple. I'm just going to rotate the screen. And look at how in the landscape orientation, today's weather was to the left and that image was to the right. And now when I made it portrait, today's weather is on top and the image is below. And it's not like you just rotated like some optical illusion, like the text is the right way, you know, it's legible and all that kind of stuff. So how did that work? How do we do this and how did the platform and these layout features we have added help you do that? Let's go take a look. So if you open the CSS file, you'll see that there are these things called media queries. So if you're familiar with media queries in CSS, it's just a way of grouping a whole bunch of CSS selectors together that you want to apply in bulk whenever the app is in a certain state. And in this case, we've extended media queries to have a media query for the full screen landscape view state, as well as one for the full screen portrait view state. Okay? So there's media queries that you can just have a set of CSS selectors you've configured for when you're in landscape and a set of CSS selectors you've configured for when you're in portrait. And then within that, we're using the CSS grid. So if I go down to, there's a certain place in the app where it showed you the feels like, you know, oh, it feels like 30 degrees or whatever it is. And in that particular case, it was putting it, it was using a CSS grid, it was putting it in column 1, row 4 when it was in landscape view. And then if I collapse this and I go to the portrait view, you'll see that the feels like was actually put into column 3, row 3. So you could really totally change the layout of your app and where things were, and this was in this column and that column and so forth, just in purely in CSS. And all the processing and all the logic of how to lay that out and have things flow and all that stuff is handled for you by the web engine directly. And so you should take advantage of CSS layout features, grid, flexbox, media queries, and so forth, to create UIs that will be very fast and very easy for you to create these flexible layout patterns without having to write tons of code on your own to do that. All right, so that's first thing. So we talked about All right, we've got laying out your app. Now let's talk about navigating around your app. And WinJS pages. So as you saw in the apps that we showed, there aren't like pop-up windows and that kind of stuff going on in Metro-style apps. It's a lot of inline navigation, which you're all familiar with from the web. But at the same time, it wasn't like the web model. It wasn't like every time I clicked on a link, the whole UI got torn down and it loaded a whole new URL. Okay? They're all, you know, what people, a lot of people call single-page applications, right? It's one DOM, you know, tree, and you're just flipping out segments of the content inside it so that you can have smooth transitions and animations and stuff happening, all right, without like tearing down the whole view and everything. And so WinJS Pages is a set of APIs that help you do that. And they basically make it easier for you to load and unload a whole chunk, a whole package of HTML plus CSS plus JavaScript directly into UI as a little segment there and have it start running right away. And even if you have other WinJS dynamic content inside there, like controls or binding templates and so forth, that'll all just start running for you right away. And so it's very easy to create these kinds of UIs where you want to have that seamless inline navigation and not do a whole page teardown and so forth. And so let's jump over to the demo machine to see a demo of that. All right, here's the pages sample. It's very simple. All these samples, again, are available on MSDN. So here you see, in this sample, basically, they just loaded a bunch of different pages. And each page is kind of within a little dotted line gray box. Okay, so here's a page. And this sample shows all these different ways you can load pages. I'm just going to give you one as an example. But you can see that it loaded this page, and things inside are interactive. There's a certain styling associated with the page, so it has this kind of little border around it. The page provided that. The toggle switch is a WinJS control, not a HTML control, and that's already hooked up and working automatically for you. And so let's see how we did this. Okay, so this is not part of this parent page. This is a separate HTML, CSS, and JavaScript file that we kind of loaded in dynamically at runtime in this sample. So let's see what's going on there. Well, if we look at the HTML, that parent page, okay. So see on the parent page it says, this control is rendered via call to WinJS UI pages.render. So let's find that text here. Oh, here we go. This control is rendered via call to blah, blah, blah. And right below that, we just put this div, okay, with a certain class on it that we just made up what that class name was. Then in our JavaScript code, all we did was we found that class. So we did element query selector to find that class. And then we called the following, We found that class. And then we just called the WinJS UI pages.render function. Okay? And that function, all you do is you pass an HTML page to it. You pass it the div that you want to put the page into, so that's that render host thing we just selected. And you can pass it some parameters you want to pass onto the page, and then the page can listen to those and do something with them. And so in this case, those parameters we passed onto the page were that string. This control is created by WinJS UI pages.render, which is that string you see right here. All right, and if I were to kill that project for a second and just replace that with foo, for example, you'd see that would say foo, okay? And so what is this page here? Well, it's just another page in my app. So everything that's inside that dotted line little box is just this HTML page right here. It's a full regular HTML page. It references script. It references CSS. So here's that CSS file. Here's the thing that's setting that border with that dashed border, for example, on it. It has JS code that runs. So as soon as the page is instantiated, it'll run this code, and it gives you certain functions so you can start running stuff when the page is ready. It's actually inside the page. If we look at the HTML there, you can see that it's using some binding features that I'll talk about later to dynamically take those parameters we passed into the page at page instantiation time and show them right there on the screen. And so that's kind of a quick summary of WinJS pages for you, and you should kind of go look into that. There's a lot of richness to it. This is a great thing you should take advantage of to create those single page apps with inline navigation, not tearing down your whole UI and so forth, because that's really important to kind of the fast and fluid feel of Metro-style apps. All right. Well, now, once we have the overall layout established and we're starting to get these inline pages kind of loading, we have to think about how do we animate stuff as it comes in. So if you remember from those apps I showed you at the beginning, as I switch between pages, there's this transition animation, right? When I switch that page in WordPress, it kind of flew in from the side a little bit. So how does that work, and how do we do that in a way that's fast and fluid? Well, we've gone ahead and we've implemented a bunch of CSS standards now around animations directly into our HTML engine. CSS, 2D transforms, 3D transforms, transitions, and this thing called animations. And what's special about these is that they're smooth, independent composition that doesn't block the UI thread. And I'll show you what that means through the sample. But you really want to use the CSS animations and transforms instead of the traditional way you might do animations in a web app is in JavaScript. So you might like change the position, change the position, change the position, change the position over time. There are a lot of JavaScript libraries of animations that do that today. But you're not going to get the kind of performance and smoothness you want doing that, especially if you're trying to really create a high-performance application that feels really fast and fluid and runs on, you know, ARM devices with different performance characteristics and so forth. And so let's go take a look at a sample that we have for that. And this is the independent animation sample. And so the first thing this will just show you here is this kind of simulates the UI thread being busy. So, you know, imagine there's other processing going on in your app. You're doing various things. Users are interacting with things and so forth. The red ball on the top shows if you were doing the animation in JavaScript, you'd run into these hiccups all the time. That's, you see that all the time when you're using web apps today. Using independent animations that are done in CSS, it's actually done off the UI thread, and it's beautifully composed and fast and fluid the whole time. And there's a lot of things you can do with these. You can do various types of 2D transforms and opacity and stuff. You can do 3D transforms. The sample shows various all these sorts of configurations you can do. I can have this flip all the way around backwards. You can know about when animations are complete, so then trigger a next animation. So there's like that's transition one, and when that's complete, then it's going to automatically trigger transition two. And then even while the transitions are happening, things can remain dynamic. So while transition two is happening, which is this kind of growing thing, all right, that's transition two in this sample, I'm going to click it. And while I'm clicking it, I'm going to click on this button. And it's going to trigger that other one. Okay, so you can add these things up and do all sorts of fancy, you know, pants stuff using these CSS animations. And let's just go look at the code about those for a second. What I want to point out is they're really all just CSS. Okay, so that the green ball that was moving smoothly, all we did there was we had configured some CSS keyframes to say do a transform from a translate x of 0 pixels through a translate x of 400 pixels to a translate x of 800 pixels. And then we configured the animation to do that via these CSS properties over 2 seconds using a linear curve, infinitely, you know, repeating, and so on and so forth. So through CSS and the CSS work that we've done there, you can create these really great fast and fluid animations that you've never been able to do before in the web browser like that. And so take advantage of the CSS animation features to make fast and fluid apps, like we saw in those demos, how those animations were happening. Now, I will say that if you start trying to do that, you'll find that a lot of the animations, like those look like a developer made them. They're like, ooh, a 2D matrix transform or something. But there's a certain look and feel to the animations you're seeing in these apps about how they feel orchestrated and how they feel beautiful. And so we actually built for you in WinJS an animation library. It builds upon those CSS animations and transforms and so forth, but it gives you a common language of animations that you can use, and it'll make the apps feel cohesive with the system. And they're just, you know, carefully crafted animations that our design team worked with us, you know, to make that, you know, just look really polished and nice. And let's go take a look at those. All right. There's a lot of stuff to cover here. So hope you guys are keeping up. So here in this demo here, you can see some of the animations that the WinJS animation library makes available for you. The first one I'm going to show is just a simple page transition animation. Okay. So you saw that, you know, in that WordPress app and in the mail app and so forth. But there's a whole bunch of these. So there's tons of kind of pre-made animations you can take advantage of, expand and collapse. And all these animations are done with exact timings and exact experience that we have across Metro-style apps. And so users can come to understand the meaning of them. And they can come to understand, oh, that means a page is loaded. That means something else has happened. And they're configurable. So I could have that animation, the page entrance, happen with just one fell swoop. Or I can say, you know what, I want it to look orchestrated, so I'm going to pick three. And then you can see it actually happens in three segments, like three, you know, the different elements of the page kind of are split into three different pieces as they come in. So let's look at the code of how that's done. It's kind of very simple. There's just a WinJS UI animation enter page animation, you know, function as there is for the other animations. And you just pass it the div of the thing you want to animate. So the root grid happens to be the node that's like the parent of that whole page in this case, and just called that, and it hooked up all the right animations and stuff for you. And if you want to do the multi-phase one, the orchestrated animation, you could just, you know, break out the nodes in that way, the divs and so forth, and then it'll orchestrate that for you automatically and have the right look and feel. So it's very easy for you to get applications where your UI feels animated and nice, and it's using the same innovation curves and so forth, and it's still powered by all that CSS animation stuff I was showing you, kind of the pedal to the metal stuff. All right? So that is the WinJS animation library, building upon the CSS animations. And you can see there how, when we thought about the UI platform, we thought about everything you need to make a Metro-style app, and we thought about what made sense to put in HTML and what made sense to put into this JavaScript library. Because it wouldn't make sense to put the Windows-specific, you know, animations into HTML and propose those as like web standards or something. So those make sense to put in the JavaScript library, but all those core animation capabilities made sense to put right into HTML. So what's about HTML pointer APIs? So we've talked about laying out your app, we've talked about navigating around and having things come in animated and pretty. And that's about interacting with stuff. Well, when you're interacting with stuff, one of the really relevant things about Windows 8 is how it works with touch. So it's not just mouse and keyboard, it's mouse and keyboard and touch and pen. And we need to think about, well, how do we expose the APIs for people in the right way to do that? Because you want to write your API not just for touch. It's not a touch-only device. It's a touch and mouse and pen and keyboard device. And so what we did is we came up with these HTML pointer APIs. And the pointer APIs basically give you all the raw inputs of every kind of pointing device you could be using, fingers, pen, mouse. And they also give you gesture APIs for common kind of interactions like rotating and that kind of stuff. And they give you a common API you can use for all pointer-based inputs. So if you have an app you want to write and you want it to work the same with mouse and pen and keyboard, you don't have to think about all of those separately. You can just write to these APIs once, and the same thing will work with all the different input devices. And I'll show that to you right now. And they support multiple simultaneous contexts. You can really do very rich UIs with them. So let's go take a look at that. And here's a sample that shows that. So, those APIs, and we're going to start it here. It's actually one of my favorite samples. It's kind of really fun. So it kind of creates this little table here. So I'm moving my finger around to move it. I can move the separate shapes. I can move two of them at once. I have two fingers there. I can take one and I can apply, I can stretch it and rotate it and so forth. And I can do that all with a mouse, too. So if I just move a mouse, the mouse is moving it. And I have a pen on this computer. Some computers have pens. And I can grab and move them with a pen. And I can do some of these things simultaneously. So I can use a mouse on this guy and then grab these two guys with my two fingers and be using them all at the same time here, okay? So very powerful APIs, fully supportive of multiple contacts simultaneously and all that kind of stuff, handling gestures and so forth for you. Let's switch to the code. Now, there's a lot of code in this app because it's a fancy app. It does a lot of stuff. But the main thing I want to show you is the events that you should listen to. It's these MS pointer down. So that means a contact point has been made. MS pointer up means a contact point has come up. MS pointer cancel means the UI got canceled somehow. For example, maybe another app came in and took focus, and so it wasn't the user lifted their fingers, just something canceled the operation that was going on. And then there's a bunch of gesture events that you can listen to for things like tap, someone just tapped, or hold. So if you want to have, there's a standard timing we have for like how long is it that we consider someone held something, and so you can just listen to that gesture for that, and then okay, the standard Windows holding time happened, and you can do whatever you're doing on hold. And so these same events here show up for mouse, touch, and pen, and then you can use this pointer type to determine. If you need to determine, if you're ever like, oh gosh, I want to do it a little differently for pen versus for mouse or something, you can use the pointer type to figure out what type of input it was. Or if you don't care, then you're hunky-dory. You just go ahead with the pointer events, and your app just works. All right. So that's kind of the raw kind of touch events and stuff that have been exposed up to the web and developer, and you should take advantage of those. And I'll point out at this time that all the APIs I'm talking about that are part of HTML and CSS are available to you in IE on the desktop as well. So they're not just in the Metro-style apps, they're just part of what's available in IE too. The things I tell you about that are part of WinJS are really just there for the Metro-style apps. All right, CSS scroll views. So I showed you how you can use all the raw touch and do your own touch handling, but a super common thing you're going to do all the time in these apps is just have scrolling. All right, you just have panning and scrolling and zooming and that kind of stuff. And so we built those in at a deeper level into the system so that you have the right performance and inertia and bouncing and all that kind of fancy pants stuff you want to have. And so the CSS scroll views are the APIs that let you do that. And they're really an extension to to the overflow tag, so overflow hidden, overflow auto, et cetera. There's those APIs that we've kind of implemented behind the scenes to work great with touch. Plus, we've added some more CSS attributes like that that you can use. And they'll give you stick-to-the-finger performance. You get the same kind of experience across your apps as all the other apps have. And they automatically will work with mouse, touch, and keyboard for you, so you don't have to write special code for that. And they support fancy things like snap points and nesting and chaining. And so let's see a demo of the CSS scroll views. All right. I've got a ton of VS projects open here. All right, and this is a fun sample someone on my team made that shows this. So in this sample here, you can see there's just like a picture. And in this case here, I can't pan this picture. Okay, there's a little div inside here where this picture is. And right now, it's set to overflow none. Now, I can set it to overflow allowing horizontal scrolling, but it won't scroll vertically. It'll just scroll horizontally. I can set it to vertical scrolling. It'll scroll vertically. And this is chaining actually in action here because there's a parent scroller in this particular. My monitor is too small for this sample. If I do horizontal here, it won't do it though, right? Just vertical. I can set it to just unrailed. And so that means, I can just go around in circles and whatever I want to do, and it'll kind of just, you know, move around any direction. Or I can set it to what we call railed 2D scrolling. In that case, if I started going left to right, then it'll only go left to right. Okay, so even if I start going like at an angle, it'll just keep going left to right. If I started going up and down, it'll only go up and down. It won't. But if I started going kind of at an angle, then it'll be kind of loosey-goosey and free-form. All right, that's what railed means. So it makes it easier for people to kind of feel deliberate. Like, you know, when you're trying to position something very carefully, and it makes it easier for you to do that kind of stuff, while at the same time still able to do kind of loosey-goosey panning around 2D. There's these things called snap points. You can do this kind of thing where you say, hey, I want to always snap at certain boundaries. That's mandatory snap points. There's proximity snap points. I can say, well, if I really do a big gesture, definitely like end at the snap point. But if I'm just like very precise, don't. Okay, that's proximity snap points. There's zooming, so I can go and you can set something up so you can have optical zoom inside an element. That's brand new kind of thing. You could never do that before in HTML. And you can, hi, thanks. And the other thing I want to point out is there's CSS properties around letting you interact on objects inside the scroll view. Because think about the scenario of, oh, I have some objects I want to make interactive, but they're inside a scrolling thing, and someone started moving their finger. What's supposed to happen? Is the scroll view win or that object win? And so there's other CSS properties called MS Touch Actions you can do to override the default behavior there. So you can say, in this view, if I scroll left and right, okay, this scrolls left and right. But if I put two fingers down this guy here, then I can pinch him. This guy here, left and right, he'll scroll. But if I do up and down, oh, he becomes unhinged, and he lets me move him up and down. This guy here, left and right, he becomes unhinged. Up and down, he just scrolls. All right, and that's just done with this MS Touch action stuff, where you basically tell the system what actions, what gestures you want it to handle, and then all the rest get passed down to you, and you can do whatever you want with them. So let's look at the code of this. And again, this is exciting because it's all CSS. So all those examples I showed, the not scrolling, the horizontal scrolling, the vertical scrolling, here's how you do rails, MS scroll rails, none or railed. You can decide how you want to do that. Here's how you can set those snap points. MS scroll snap points, and you can say if they're mandatory or not, and what the interval is, of how often you want them to happen. Proximity ones, and so forth. You can set MS content zooming. That's the way you did that zooming thing. This is all CSS, and you can set the minimum zoom amount and the maximum zoom amount. CSS lets you do all this kind of stuff. And so that's the CSS kind of scroll views. Here's the touch actions. Again, it's more kind of CSS properties. So just configuring your UI with the right CSS properties, you can have all these great attributes and behaviors built into them. And of course, all those things work with mouse as well, so I can grab the scroll bar and all that kind of stuff. All right, so that's CSS scroll views. Okay, so now we've talked about, we've talked about a lot already, and we still have a lot to cover. We talked about laying out your app. We talked about navigating around your app with pages. We talked about how you can get animations and how you have those animations have the personality. We talked about how you can start doing raw interaction yourself and how you can have the system handle very common touch interactions like panning for you. Now talking about real nuggets of interactivity, like controls. So we did a bunch of work on the HTML controls for Windows 8. This gives you a lot of the standard controls, things that are already in HTML that you know about. Button, input type equals check, select tag, and so forth. Text boxes. We've also added some new ones, so slider, input type equals range. We've implemented some more of these standards. We've enhanced all of them to work with touch, mouse, and keyboard, and we've given them some extensive styling capabilities. So let's go take a look at that. Right now. All right. Everyday widgets. This is a very extensive sample. It kind of shows a lot of these. But you can see that there's a bunch of text input controls. And these have been super optimized for touch. So they have things like if you can set if they're numeric, they show you the number keyboard. If they're not, they don't show you the number keyboard. There's touch text selection. They have features like spell checking. So this is really cool. Oh, I guess we have spell checking disabled in this one. But I'm sure there's some that has it enabled. This is really cool. There you go. So spell checking in them, all sorts of kind of features like that. And you can, of course, style them. So here's like someone did the Star Wars effect styling in that one. It's still fully functional, though, so I can mistype a word and it gets underlined in red and I can spell check it. So totally, you know, functional. That's the CSS transform being used in that. So you can see I can combine these things. Another one is just the select control. Again, it's kind of been optimized for touch. So it has things like if you have a long list, you can scroll up or down. So you can get to, you know, I live in Washington and get there very easily. All these kind of enhancements. One of the new controls we've implemented is the HTML range control. So you don't have to implement your own sliders in JavaScript anymore. You can just use input type equals range. It's a very full-featured slider. You can put it up and down. You can put it left and right. You can have certain snap points on it, so it'll only go to certain values. It can be continuous. You can style it lots of ways. And that's what I actually want to highlight a little bit is the styling capability. So you can just use the intrinsic control there and look at this one down here, how we've styled it. So when I press it, it has a press state. It looks orange. The little thumb looks orange. It has this green kind of highlight state. It has this totally different kind of look to it. And let's go look at the code behind that for a second. So if I look at the HTML file, all that was an input type equals range. Let's go find it a second. So it's input type equals range. That was all I needed to do for that little slider there. And I put a certain CSS ID on it, steps. And if I go to my CSS file, you can see that I started taking that steps identifier and styling it in lots of ways, including using these pseudo classes. So we exposed colon colon ms thumb. That's how you access the thumb on that slider. Thumb hover, that's how you access the hover state on the thumb on that slider. Active on the ms thumb. So you can, you know, control all these specific parts of the control and style each individual part of it individually if you want to create that kind of rich experience, but you still have that same interactivity and so forth. So all the features we built into the slider about, oh, if your finger is kind of sloppy, it still slides right, you know, that still works there too. Okay. So that's the HTML controls. Optimized with touch, we've added a bunch of new ones, and we've made them extensively stylable. And you'll want to take advantage of these to get the right look and feel in your MetroStyle apps, rather than trying to do your own slider and so forth, which you might, you know, it's a lot of work to get it right, and it's running in JavaScript and taking up resources and so forth. Okay, so I showed you that styling. Well, one of the things a lot of people want to start with is a great kind of default visual look for things. And so we've actually given you some style sheets in WinJS. Now, like I said, MetroStyle UI is not a very specific like looking, you know, skin. It's not a very specific style. It doesn't mean you have to have everything has to have a square border and be brightly colored or something. You can, you know, we want you to make apps that look and feel great and have the brand, you know, of your company, the brand of, you know, your customers are looking for and so forth. But we want them to be rooted in the MetroStyle design and have that kind of feeling, that gestalt to them, that interactivity, the common kind of patterns that people recognize. And so the style sheet helps you do that because it gives you a huge CSS file that has all the default visuals for all these different controls and all these backgrounds and textiles and so forth all in there. And then you can just go tweak them and customize them to kind of fit into your branded look without having to write everything from scratch. A great example of that is we have a sample we made, but it's a little bit of a tool as well, called the Theme Roller. And this kind of shows the power of that. So this page here has a bunch of all the UI elements that we have, buttons and progress and select tag and text, and you can select text and list view and ratings and all sorts of things. And it makes it easy for you to just pick a different color scheme. So let's say I kind of wanted green buttons instead of this kind of blueberry. We call this blueberry, this color. Instead of blueberry, let's say you wanted green buttons, I can just hook that up. Actually, I'm going to make them darker in the background there, 255. And so you can see it's very easy, and all of a sudden everything becomes styled that way. So very extensive styling support, and all the things that you might do, pick that up, and this little app actually spits out the CSS that you'd have to add to your app to kind of override the default styles and get this, you know, look. And we give you, by default, two starting styles. We give you a light theme and a dark theme. So depending if you kind of have a darker look or a lighter look to your app, you can pick the right style sheet to start with, and then you can customize whatever aspects of the style sheet you want to customize to get your specific look. If you want to be green or red or polka dot or whatever you're doing, your branded background, you got it. And if we look at the code of that, I want to pop up basically the style sheet. So you go into that references node in VS there. We see WinJS is referenced under there. We look under the CSS folder, and we see those two style sheets, UI dark and UI light. And if you open them up, you can see there it is. There's all the, you know, CSS classes and styles and so forth that are involved in creating the UI, and you can go and override any of them as needed, and you kind of get them all for free. One of the things I'll point out is that we did a good job of making sure that all the high contrast visuals are there. So if you have to make an app that works for users who have high contrast vision, we have all the right CSS styles in there for that automatically, and also for international text. So if you know international text handling can be very complicated because there's different font fallbacks you have to use for, you know, East Asian languages and so forth. And so we've actually built those all in here. So if you just, like, search for Sigo, that's like our default font, you'll find that the classes that, if I get down there, we kind of have like the whole list of fonts in the right order and so forth, so that, you know, if you're in Himalaya and whatever the script is that's used there, there's a font fallback built into the style sheet for that. So it's a really great starting point for you to make apps that work with high contrast, work with international, all that kind of stuff is just, you know, right in that style sheet. Start with that and then customize the things you want to customize to have your own look to it. And the theme roller, a sample, shows you how to do that and helps you do that. All right, back to our presentation. So that was the WinJS style sheet. Okay, so we talked about laying out your app and navigating around and animations and controls and styling those controls and getting your look. Not so about kind of more complex UI you might start building. Okay, that was kind of the simple building blocks of stuff. But if you're really building an app, you're going to start connecting to data. You're going to start doing processing, doing things in the app. And one of the things that's really important to Metro-style apps is that we want things to always feel fast and fluid, always feel responsive. We don't want hung UI in our apps. We don't want, oh, there's a network call happening to some web service and we're going to sit there and wait. We don't want, oh, I'm waiting for some processing to happen. We don't want, oh, I'm waiting for some, you know, local file system access, all these things, all these bottlenecks that exist. You don't want the UI to ever feel frozen or hung or unresponsive. To help you do that, we've adopted in the Windows runtime certain coding practices around asynchronous coding, and we've also done that in the Windows library for JavaScript, and that's really encapsulated by this thing called the WinJS promise. And you can think of the WinJS promise as an IOU. If you write a function that ordinarily would just return a value and you wait for that value to come back, a promise is kind of like an IOU for that value. It says, here's that value when it's available. And I'll show you how that works. But using promises, it makes it easy for you to handle asynchronous operations without blocking the UI. It gives you a consistent programming model to them. And they actually work great in concert with the WinRT API. So if you're calling WinRT API to access some local file storage, for example, you'll want to use promises around the code you write there. And let's look at a code example of that with WinJS promises. Let's see here. So here's a little example. I'm going to show you the code. You're not going to understand what's going on, and I'll show you the code, and then you'll understand what's going on. So in this sample here, for what we did is we just implemented an add function. Just adds, you know, one, you know, x plus y equals z. But we put a little timer in it so that we simulated it being some slow function, okay, like it could be accessing the network or whatever. And then we're showing here how you can call one, and then when you get the value, take that value and pass it back to itself to add it to another number, and then call that and pass it back to itself to add another number. And they kind of chain up in this nice way without blocking the UI. So you can still, you know, while it's doing that, I can still go and, you know, switch around and do other things in the app, okay? And so let's go and look at the code behind that. So basically, the first thing I'm going to show you is the async add function, okay? So this is takes num1 and num2 and it adds them and returns the sum. But instead of returning that value directly, see what it's returning? It's returning a new WinJS promise. So it's not returning that number. It's returning a promise to return you that number, okay? And so that WinJS promise, and you basically pass a function pointer into that of the function you're running. And what that function did in this case here is we put a timeout, okay? That's the thing we put in there to kind of simulate some slow operation. It waits that time, and then when it's done, it returns the sum as this promise. So then when you click that button in our app, okay, does everyone get the add async add kind of function high level? It's returning a promise, not the actual value. And then in the code itself, when someone clicked that button, what did we do? We called async add, and then we called this dot then, all right? Because what did async add do? Async add returned, right away it returned to us a promise. And on that promise object, there's a dot then function. And the dot then function lets you pass a function to it that you want to run once that promise has realized itself, okay? Once that IOU has come due. And so in this code here, we run async add, then we pass this function pointer to it that takes the return value it got back, that V, that's what's passed into it. And we're being hilarious here, but we tell you what we just did. Oh, we just got this value V out of this function after adding num1 to num2. So it's telling you what just happened. And then we take that and we add it to itself using async add again. So we're showing how you can chain these things together. So we do one slow operation, dot then, And what does this async add here do? It returns another promise. So what can you do with that promise? You can call that dot then on it again. All right? So we called this slow function, dot then, got a promise back. On the promise dot then, we did some other code that called that same slow function, actually. And then on the dot then, does it again. So chaining the second then with the value. So it shows you that new sum value plus the new thing we're going to add to it. It calls async add again. Then the last time, we're like, OK, that was fun. We're just going to show you the output. And then we're going to call dot done. Dot done. And dot done is how you end that chain of promises. So you can create these promise chains, dot then, dot then, dot then, dot done, when you're all done. All right? And so just to show you that code again, now that you kind of have that conceptual model of what was going on there, right? Now you can think about what was going on here. We're calling it async add. We got back a promise right away. Dot then, which is the function that kind of gets, you know, realized once the value is there, it did this, it called itself again. We waited. We got that promise right away, dot then, we called it again, and then we were dot done. All right? And these promises are super, super useful and flexible. You can do fancy things with them, like we have join operations, so you can run two promises and say, wait until all of these are done, and then do something. Or you can do promise dot any. And so you can say, as soon as any of these promises is done, then do this thing. Okay, so it's a very flexible model for asynchronous programming that you'll use again and again. And you see us use this throughout WinJS when you start using binding and controls and the other things I'm about to show you. So dot promises. All right. You'll have fun like working through that sample and kind of going through it in your head and stuff. And it's a really good concept to get down. All right. So let's talk about binding. So we talked about promises and how promises let you do lots of these asynchronous operations. But a very common way that you're doing these kinds of operations is you just kind of want to data bind to some data. There are a lot of different patterns that exist for this. And we have in WinJS a whole bunch of facilities around binding that we used ourselves to build a lot of our apps. And we put in WinJS, and we use within the controls as well. What WinJS binding gives you is it gives you one-way data binding. It gives you asynchronous notifications. So as you'll see, we're going to create a binding object, and then we're going to have various properties on it update, and then we'll update just that part of it so you can asynchronously get kind of notifications as those happen. You can use them programmatically, and you can use them declaratively. And actually, what I'm going to demo is a declarative template kind of model. You can create a template and then edit some values and have that get updated. That's the templates. So let's go and see binding. There's a lot to binding, and we're going to, for the most part, scratch a bit of the surface of it. All right, so let's go take a look at that. So I'm going to start with the programmatic binding, just to show you some of the very basic things you can kind of do. Oh, thank you. All right, this is the programmatic binding sample. And again, just to get in everyone's head what binding is all about, I can have some properties here. So I can say foo and bar, and I can have some UI change in response to those properties. It's a common kind of thing you might do. And you can actually, there's quite a bit of richness to how bindings work. You can create kind of well-defined types for them. So you can structure them to have RGB values, for example, let me make it more colorful so you can kind of see what's going on. You can kind of structure data together and bind a whole blob of data, define types that way. You can just kind of describe the different fields and kind of group them together. I'll show you that in the code in a second with binding. So they're pretty flexible kind of concept there. And then if we switch to the other sample, which is the one we're going to actually poke into more of the code of, is a declarative binding in templates. So in this sample here, again, it's that kind of basic binding we saw, that kind of stuff, update some properties and update some other UI in response to it. And we also have some great facilities around templating. So this is a very common thing you're going to do in an app is you're going to have some chunk of UI you want to bind to some data and have that data update. Templates, if you use like one data object, is a really great way to do that. So this first object, I can call this red object. And see how I got updated to say red object there. I can change the color of it. You can see I'm binding to a CSS property. So I'm not just binding to a string value, but I just bound here to a CSS property on that. if you guys kind of caught what happened there, if you think about it. So let's look at the code behind this and understand what's going on with binding. All right, so we're going to start with just saying what's going on there. First, we create our binding definition. And this is kind of defining the structure, basically, that we're going to be binding to. In this case, for this little example I gave you guys, there's a text property and then a color property, and the color itself comprises an R, G, and B value. We actually are going to create three instances of this object, because if you remember there are three objects there, and I can switch between them, object 1, 2, 3. So here's the code that's just creating those. So the data source was a new WinJS binding define, and then we kind of instantiate it with the different kind of default values we wanted to have there. So that created this kind of binding object. Now we got to bind that to some UI, and what we want to use here is the binding template to do that. And so let's talk about what binding template is. If we go to the HTML file that kind of goes along with this sample page here, you'll see this whole chunk of code right here. And this is a binding template. And this is a common, this is kind of how we do our declarative model in WinJS. And you'll see this with the controls as well, where you see this data win control parameter. Because the binding template is in effect a control. It's a control that's connected to a binding object and updates the stuff inside it with respect to what that binding object is saying. And so we've defined this div there, ID template control template, said it's a WinJS binding template. And then inside there, you see how there are those different divs and list items and spans and so forth that have within them these data win bind properties. And these are all things that are used by the binding system. So if I have, for example, C has this R, G, and B, and it shows those, and see how here there's the name of the overall object. So here I have a list item, and I bound the text content of this list item to this text property. In this case here, where I have the R, we bound the text content property of that span to the color.r property of the binding object. Here we bound it to the color.g property, the color.b property. And then, if you recall, I changed the overall color of the object. So here it was black or it's red or whatever. And the way we did that is we actually have binding happening on the styling. So we're styling the style.background attribute, right, which is the attribute that maps to the background color of that object, that div. We're binding it to the color, but this is showing kind of the programmatic capabilities that exist with the binding system. We're actually using this template control.toCSSColor function to give you back the right value. Because in our binding object, we represent the colors an R, a G, and a B. But that's not how CSS background accepts. You can't just pass it an R, a G, and a B. You have to pass it a color value in a specific format. And so that's what this function here does, and we'll kind of walk through that. All right? So we had that template definition in HTML and markup. So it's very easy for me in markup to define how I wanted my UI to look and where I wanted those properties to go for my data-bound object. So that's what this is. We saw here where I created that binding object. I defined kind of the structure of it, and I created specific instances of it. And so now let's see how we hook that up. It's very simple. We go and we select the div where we want those binding templates to go. So we select the div we want those binding templates to go. Binding templates to go, the element.query selector. So we got that div. So if you remember in that parent page here, here's the div where we want those templates to kind of show up. We selected that. And then we called, for each of the data binding objects, we just said template control.render on them. Template control was that template control I defined in HTML. And we just passed them the object itself, the binding object, and where we want to render. And it kind of spit it out there. All right? And that's kind of basically how you hook this up. And when we went to update these properties, what's going on there? What we did is we wrote a little function called bindInput. And what bindInputs does is it basically hooks up to the different event listeners on those different text fields and so forth to cause the data source's property, so data source text or the data source's color.r, to get updated in response to that change. So every time there's a change in one of those text boxes, it changes the data binding object, and then the system, the WinJS binding system, automatically goes and updates the template for you. And that's how you can create a template in HTML, binding object, hook up some event listeners on text fields, have them change the binding object, and then the binding object will automatically update the template in real time for you. And it's very easy to create a UI like this. And this is, binding's always a sophisticated topic, but you can use this sample as a starting point. And there's lots of examples here and in the other sample that kind of show you ways to do that. And the other thing that I talked about on this one was that toCSSColor, so that's just a function I was able to implement. that allowed me to get back the right format I wanted, so the RGB kind of format using those color values so I could bind that in the styling. And you can use that for lots of things, because maybe the JSON object that you're using formats dates in one format, but you want to present them in your UI in another format, for example. That's another thing you'd use this kind of capability for, to transform at runtime the data from the binding object into the presentation of it. All right? Okay, so that's binding. And so binding is what you want to use for a single kind of when you have a single data item, all right? So I have one record from my data set or one JSON object and I want to bind it to the UI in a template like that. But what if I have a lot of these things, okay? Well, then you want to start using the list view. The list view is that standard control that gives you that big grid or that list you saw in the mail app and gives you all these interactions around it but binds to lots of data asynchronously and very performantly. It gives you this common UI for presenting stuff. It supports things like selection and so forth. It lets you bind to data of your choice. The example I'm going to show you is binding to using something called binding list, which I'm not going to demo extensively, but I'll show you that as part of this, which is basically an array of these binding objects. But you can also write your own data source plugin to connect directly to web storage or local storage. And it has rich templating and styling capabilities on each item. And it's fully data and UI virtualized. So that's how the mail app, for example, in Windows 8 uses list view. And, you know, mailboxes can have gazillions of items in them. And you'll see it's very fast to pan through them and jump around the list and so forth because of that virtualization that goes on. And so let's see an example of that in use. We'll go to the list view sample here. There's actually a whole host of list view samples. It's a very rich area. We're going to look at just the basic one for now. If you go to the MSDN, you can download all the samples around this. All right. So this sample just shows you how you can instantiate a list view. So here we have a list view. These are each templated items. So you'll see in our code we have some JSON array that has banana blast, low-fat frozen yogurt, and creamy orange with sorbet, and just has kind of this JSON array that represents this data. The control lets you do things like invoke events. So every time I click on these, I get an event fired that said, oh, someone clicked on this thing. You can switch between different layouts and presentations of the data. You can get and set selection. So as a user, I can go and I can cross-slide or I can right-click on the control, all these kind of common interaction models that you want with a list view. Programmatically, you can do stuff. You can select all. You can clear. You can say, hey, what's selected? And it'll tell you the current things that are selected and so forth. And there's a lot more you can do with views. You can group things, and you can have interactive elements inside list views and tons and tons of stuff. It's a super powerful control. And I'm going to show you kind of the basics of it here now. So if we go to our code, let's look at, first of all, how we instantiate that list view there. What we did is that it's a data win control trick again, okay? So I have a div there, ID list view. I put data win control equals winjs.ui.listview. You'll see that in all the templates, there's this function called process all, winjs.process all, that's run on page load. And that function basically goes through everything, and it finds all the data win controls, and it hydrates them, if you think about it that way. It instantiates them in response to that tag being there. So I have data win control tells me it's a list view. Data win options is a bunch of parameters I can pass to that list view. And in this case, I'm passing two very important options are the item data source and the item template. The item data source is the data I want to show, and the item template is the template, the WinJS binding template, that thing I just showed you, that I want to use to show each individual representation of that item. Okay? And there's a bunch of other properties you can set. Enable selection, disable selection, swiping, and tons of properties. So that item template is right up here. It's that WinJS binding template. And you can see that in that WinJS binding template, we decide to bind a few things. We decide to have an image, and we said, hey, bind the source property on the image to this picture variable. Bind the there's an H4 and an H6 inside. There's like a big title and a small title. Bind the big title to this title property, and bind the small label to this text property. And then, so that's kind of the template. So I've kind of explained the template part that's kind of connected to that list view. And then we actually have a JavaScript file here that creates a WinJS binding list. WinJS binding list is just a function we have that gives you a quick, lightweight wrapper around a JavaScript array. It works in all ways like a JavaScript array. All the same functions you can do on a JavaScript array you can do on it, but it's observable. So it can give you async notifications of changes have happened to the array. And so you'll want to use WinJS binding list quite a bit. And it's a really helpful thing to just plug into a list view, because then if you want to delete an item, you delete an item from the WinJS binding list, the list view gets a notification and it'll make the item, you know, disappear with that animation that you saw and so forth. So you can just act on this WinJS binding list and in real time the list view will update and so forth as items are added, inserted, deleted, or modified. And so you can see we just passed it to instantiate. All we had to pass is a big, is some JSON array where we have those properties, the title property, that text property, and that picture property. Those same things that you saw in that binding template I was binding into. Okay, right? And so basically just hooking those things up, that binding template, that binding list, passing them into a list view, and running it, you basically get this. And all those kind of capabilities, and then you can start interacting with it and setting properties and all sorts of things on it. So that's kind of list view. It's a very important control. You see it all the time in apps. Certainly anyone who's running a data-sensitive app or apps with lots of data will want to use this control to get the right UI for it. And then one final control I want to show you, kind of coming towards the end of today's presentation, is the app bar. There's more controls in WinJS than the list view and the app bar, but these are two very visible ones that I wanted to just highlight for you. The app bar is that thing that swipes in from the bottom that I showed you in the demo before and you've seen in a lot of the Windows 8 apps. It's a common UI for presenting commands on demand. And there's a lot of detail to it. There's how it kind of pops in with touch and with keyboard with mouse. There's the dismiss model of it. There's how it's positioned correctly with system content. So if I have a soft keyboard comes up, it knows to come up above the soft keyboard, not, you know, overlap, you know, getting overlapped by it. There's a lot of smarts that it has, the nice animations and layout and stuff. And so let's look at how you use the WinJS app bar control. Oops. So this SDK sample here shows kind of a lot of the common uses of it. Here it just shows you the basics how to create an app bar. So I create one, I have some buttons on it, I get the events when the buttons are clicked. You can see that the buttons are positioned and styled in a very specific way. There's a common way in which the app bar has buttons look and feel. They have hover states, they have tooltips. It tends to be the general UI model, FYI, is that global commands tend to go on the right and then contextual commands go on the left. So if someone selects something, depending on the selection, you're changing the commands, those tend to go on the left. Ones that you want to have always show up tend to go on the right. And there's various things you can do with the app bar control. You can customize the color of it. You can customize the icons on it. So here's this play icon. If I tap on it, it switches to a pause icon. You can programmatically hide and show it and hide and show commands inside it. And they have a nice little animation as they come in and go. There's lots of things you can do with the app bar. You can have it come at the top and the bottom and so forth. And so let's just look at the basics of that API there. So just like you saw with the binding template, just like you saw with the list view, there's a declarative model. So all these things, there's a declarative model. There's also a programmatic model you can use to invoke them, but I'm showing the declarative model today because that's probably the most common way you'll do it. So data win controlled equals winjs.ui.appbar. That's what tells us it's an app bar control. And then the data win options, there's actually no options in this particular example I'm passing to it. You could have whatever options on it. And then inside that you actually have some more little controls. And those controls are the little buttons inside the app bar. So you have the app bar control, and then inside it you put a button with the data win control, winjsui.appbar command. And by doing that, that button gets the right visual styling and interaction and so forth that you want. And in that case, those buttons have a lot of little options you pass to them. So you'll pass to them that first button. In that example we saw, there was an add button. So you give it an ID. I want it to be command add. You give it a label add. You give it an icon. There's a whole library of icons that we're giving you kind of built into the system for you. So you can just use those. You don't have to go design your own icons. If you want to, you can create your own icons. But if you just use the standard ones, you're kind of all set. And there's a whole bunch of them. There's the section you want to show up in. Is it in that global section on the right? Or is it in that selection-based section on the left? You can set the tooltip on them. Okay, so you can pass a bunch of options to them. And you just go and you instantiate those little buttons you want there. And you also can put things like dividers. So here there's a winappbar command that's actually an appbar separator. So you saw in that sample when I pulled up that appbar, there was some buttons, some were on the right, some were on the left. There's a separator. So all that stuff is just kind of purely done in markup. And you get all those behaviors kind of built in for you. And then just to show you how to hook up event listening on those, because as you saw when I clicked one of those buttons, see it says add button pressed, or I click on remove, it says remove button pressed and so forth. That's just standard HTML event listener. So you just get those, you know, you put IDs in those things, so you get the command add, you get the command remove, and you just add an event listener on click to do whatever you want to do. So it's kind of very simple to hook up, but it gives you all those right kind of interactions and behaviors and so forth. So that's the app bar control. It's one of the signature controls in WinJS for MetroCell apps. And so that's my quick whirlwind tour of the platform for MetroCell apps with HTML and JavaScript. We dove in depth into a bunch of features, into new HTML CSS features around layouts and transforms and animations and those pointer events and the scroll views and those controls with the styling. We talked about WinJS pages for navigation, the animation library, the style sheets and how you can style those things to customize for your own look. Talked about promises and how you can get async programming patterns that make the UI really responsive and fast and fluid, and how to get data into your apps with binding, and then how to use binding with things like list view to create really, you know, rich apps that have that metro style look and feel to them, you know, pretty easily. And the app bar, how to use controls like the app bar. So we covered a lot of material in depth. Talked about how that, you know, some of that stuff is in HTML and how we've, you know, enhanced HTML for Windows 8, and it gives you that powerful engine, all the standards compliant web code, you know, you have yourselves or that are out there on the web you can use in making your MetroCell apps, plus these new features there, and WinJS, and how that gives you these controls and other UI building blocks and the style sheets and the common infrastructure. And that's the platform for MetroCell apps with HTML and JavaScript, and kind of the new stuff you should know about there. All the things I showed you, again, are samples up on the Dev Center, so you can download and play with those samples yourselves and really walk through those lines of code in a lot more detail than we can cover in one session. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming.